WAKE monitoring.
KEWA4HNT.
HNT, I think it was. This is KQ4AKE, Wayne in Simpsonville. How are you doing today?
Okay, Wayne, I'm over in Pendleton. My name is Alton Alpha Lima Tango Oscar November. And I was just sitting out here in the little old half shack turning on equipment here and there.
And kind of a dreary day outside there, isn't it?
My work begins with having to grind up or blow off or rake those golden maple, sugar maple leaves out of the front yard. I've got them probably 2 inches deep now. And they are a hassle to get up, but doggone it, they're some of the prettiest things you'll ever see in this town.
Maple leaves?
Affirmative sugar maple. My dad put them out in June of 1971. I remember it well. And he originally started with three, but I keep digging up saplings that are growing all over the place. You know, where birds carry them, squirrels, such. And they seem to sprout. So I've got a little piece of property near here. I've been kind of setting them out over there just so that, you know, I won't ever be without my sugar maples.
That's nice. Yeah, we've got a bunch of oak trees in our yard, and they're really pretty to look at all year long. And this time of year, you start looking at them sideways because, boy, they drop a lot of leaves on the ground, and I don't really have a way to get them up, so they usually get mowed into oblivion, I'm afraid.
Well, you know, I was always kind of critical of Daddy for doing that, but then he found me, and for the last 20 years of his life, seemed like I got all the chores, which is okay. He and I spent some really fun time together. But he has, on this land right here, 5 pecan trees. On the land behind it, which is probably maybe about a half an acre or a little bit better, I'm not sure exactly how much is in that little sec. That was called it the garden spot. Mother and Daddy actually paid for that land by picking up pecans.
Yeah. We have a few pecan trees on one part of our yard here, and some of them are pretty good size, but we don't ever get any good nuts off of them. They do drop pecans, but they're all, by the time they hit the ground, they're all dry and eaten up by bugs and everything. And I keep telling myself one of these days we're going to figure out what we need to do for those trees to make them produce, you know, nuts that are edible. But, yeah, my wife's parents had pecan trees, and they had all kinds of nuts, and we used to pick them up and eat them, and our trees just don't produce anything edible at all for some reason. I don't know if you know what you need to do to get them to produce fruit.
I heard stuff from my brother, but if I wanted to know for sure, I'd probably go back to Clemson and ask them, see if they couldn't give you some really good advice. I've heard that you plant lye in the ground on 3 or 4 different locations out from the tree. I've heard all kinds of stuff like that, and I just don't know. Now, mother's and daddy's trees produced and did a beautiful job, but, you know, in recent years, you're not allowed to discharge a firearm in town, and they're in town, and while we don't have many cops, there's going to be one laying around when you go to killing squirrels. The squirrels get ours. Now, this year, I had a little bit of a fungus on these trees and on the property that they have next to this one, but across the road, those trees were absolutely perfect. No squirrels, no fungus, nothing. But these trees had a little bit of a fungus, and I researched it, and it had to do with, you know, bugs growing on the back of the leaves, and they said, dust the tree. Well, these trees are 120 feet tall. I can't dust them.
They're pretty tall, too, and I've seen some stuff on the underside of the leaves on ours. It's probably the same fungus, and, well, I don't know. It seems like it would be a major effort to turn things around with those things. Yeah, you'd almost need an aerial crop duster to to get to the tops of those things for sure. I don't know. It's another one of those things, probably more effort than it's worth, I guess. I don't know.
Mother and Daddy used to, last time I picked up pecans at my parents' house, they own 2 good-sized pieces of property in downtown Pendleton. They both have pecan trees on them. I picked up 1,000-plus pounds of pecans in one season. I did it by myself. You know, you go out there and you get a grid, and you just work that grid every day. You never miss a day. And I picked up 1,000 pounds doing that. That was the last time that anyone's put any great effort into picking up pecans here. And you're right, that fungus, and it is the same thing. It certainly is. The fungus that got on these trees, they made a lot of the leaves fall off in midsummer. Now I can't get them to come off to save my life.
1,000 pounds of pecans, a lot of pecans pick up by hand. That's something else. I think eventually we might get around to contacting Clemson and see what they can tell us about it. And the trees are really big and beautiful, but they're not in great health. So I don't know if it's a matter of putting the right fertilizer down or what, but seeing as they're there, it would be nice to be able to get some edible, you know, nuts off of them.
That's true. I imagine, now these trees were put out as an orchard in 1884 by a guy named Walter All Sr. And he bought the big house to, north of here, and had kind of started having his family and everything. So he put out a pecan orchard. These trees are part of that orchard, so they're 150 years old.
How is it that you happen to know the history of all that from that far, that long ago? It's kind of interesting.
Mother and Daddy owned the house. I say Mother and Daddy. My parents are gone. But it's in their estates, and it's a house that was built in 1836. Now, my parents bought it because when it became available the last time, they didn't want neighbors. And so they could afford it, so they went out and just went ahead and bought that house. And then over the next 3 years, they gave me about just under $80,000 to redo the inside of the house, and it's absolutely doggone beautiful. It really is. I found newspapers taped or glued, rather, to the walls, on the inside of walls, from 1841 and 1846. It was the Charleston Observer, I think, was the name of the newspaper, and they had clerks in each little town around the area, and from Pendleton, rather, was a clerk named John Sitton. Now, we've always had a John Sitton. J.D. Smith. I'm sorry, J.D. Smith. And we've always had a J.D. Smith in this town. It's worse than Maverick. There's always going to be a J.D. Smith, I think. But he was the clerk for that newspaper. I imagine that was just a sense of reporting deaths or something like that. But I'm a big history buff, and Pendleton has been my home since I was born. And so, I've kind of got in touch with making sure I knew the history of Pendleton. And it's a wonderfully...
Hey, yeah, that's interesting, finding the papers in the walls like that. That's a time capsule there, going back and looking at that. It's funny, we bought a place out here near Simpsonville. We've been here like 20-something years, and we got two great big huge oak trees, one on each side of the driveway down at the road. And one of them we were kind of worried about falling in the road, so we had an arborist come out, look at it and everything to basically cut the tree down, because I was afraid it was going to fall, and half of it was like all rotted out on one side. And he came out and looked at it, hemmed and hawed around, and he gave us a price of several $1,000 to take it down. And then he had a buddy of his come look at it, because I could tell he didn't really want to do the job. And his buddy came out, knew more about trees, and he says, "Buddy, he says, that tree is over 200 years old, and it got hit by lightning about 100 years ago. That's what the rotted outside is." And he says, "There's no way I would cut that tree down. That tree will be here long after we're all dead and gone." And I'll let this thing drop for a second. This is KQ4AKE. That is, I've always noticed there was a little, looked like a little animal hole down at the bottom of one of the trees, like just a little caved-in spot that kind of went down deep, and I thought it was an animal living in there. I got to looking at it closer the other day, and apparently there was a hand-dug well there, because that hole is actually, you can look down in it with a flashlight, and it's lined with stone in a circular manner about 3 feet, 3.5 feet in diameter. And apparently there was an old water well right there at the base of that tree way back when. And I'm just dying to know you know, what it was from and who lived here and all that. I don't know that I'll ever be able to figure it out, but, you know, somebody apparently had a house down there at one time, I guess. I don't know.
That really is interesting. These old hand-dug wells often were lined with brick. I've seen them where they were stone. And I pay attention to stuff like that. I had a well up on the farm, and there's a well up here. At the name of the house I'm talking about, the big white house on my left, is the Gillyard House. When you come to Pendleton looking up different houses, you look up for the Gillyard House, and that will come up on this one. It's been changed a fair amount, so I think it's moved a little bit away from history, but it's still that old house. And when you get down into the guts of it, you can see it. But what you got on your property, that's really interesting. I've had people tell me where there are holes at the bottom, there's two trees that have grown together. I've had people tell me all kinds of stuff, but I'm not an arborist, and I'm just gathering my information as I go, so to speak. I'm not sure exactly what the disposition of these pecan trees will be. They're older. They the squirrels take every nut off of the tree. They won't eat green nuts, but they'll cut them down all summer long. I have found three good pecans this season.
And I never paid attention if they were, you know, taking the nuts out of the trees or cutting them out of there. But now that you say that, I do find lots of green nuts on the ground out there. Of course, they're green, but they got brown spots all over them. But now that you say that, I bet you the squirrels are knocking them out of the trees and doing that. I don't know. I'm not much of a tree guy. I don't know that much about them. But, yeah, we need to look into that, because if we could get, you know, good nuts off of those trees, that would be kind of neat.
Affirmative. Now, this radio is beginning to act up on me. I'm operating on an older Icon, and I notice it's freezing up on the carrier. Won't allow me to resist it or release it. So this may be my final. WA4HNT.
QN. 4QN.
Q4F, I think it was. This is KQ4AKE. Go ahead, sir.
Jump in here. And that's on the wrong frequency, but I heard you talking about squirrels and the issues with them in firearms, but they, I don't know if you're aware, but they sell what they call pellet or BB guns these days that are just as powerful as a .22 caliber rifle. And, let me see, and it's not a firearm. It's a BB gun.
One at every door. I've got one that shoots 10 times.
Roger that. That should take care of your squirrel problem. In the wild, leave you alone, because it's not a firearm, you know. Just got to pick them up and dispose of them.
Quick story I'll tell short. My dad owns this real nice Kubota lawnmower. I would drop the dead squirrels from this property where he was killing them and a neighboring property down a hole. And then one day while he was mowing the grass, he drove over that hole. It looked like a fence hole in the ground. And I was just dropping them down in there, and he sucked every squirrel out of there into that mowing deck.
That was probably pretty bad, but I just wasn't sure if you were aware of that, because you were talking about firearms and city, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you can take them out with those BB guns, and they're not your kids' BB guns anymore if you get a good one.
I've got two real good ones and one that's just been around the house all these years. One of mine, like I say, will shoot 10 rounds before you have to reload it, which is kind of a cool thing to have. And, yeah, they don't regard it as a firearm, so it falls beneath the laws. And but I agree with them. You still got to be responsible for it. You can be responsible for where that round goes.
Along that line, black powder is not considered a firearm. You could theoretically carry a black powder pistol around in your belt all day without any kind of permit or anything, because it's not considered a firearm.
I knew that, too. I thought it was an odd thing that they did when they did that. And we've got that the third station from Simpsonville. He's the guy with the well that he's found.
I apologize, I missed my online poker here, but yeah, you can carry around a black powder pistol right out there in plain sight, and they can't do squat because it's not a self-contained projectile firearm, and it's just a loophole in the law.
Disconnect this radio and fire another one up here. This one's locking down on frequency. I'm having to kill the power supply to get it to release. I want to make this my final. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Thanks for talking. WA4HNT clear.
Q4, a.k.a. in Simpsonville. Good talking with you guys. We'll talk to you in a little bit. And we're clear also. Thank you.
Jack, can I get your last call for my log?
KQ4. A-K-E, that's Kilo Quebec 4 Alpha Kilo Echo. Name is Wayne and located outside of Simpsonville, South Carolina.
To that, Wayne. I'm KY4QM. I'm on a J-pole made out of copper pipes like you'd have in your house. But it's working pretty good. My name's Roy.
Hey, sir. KQ4AKE, yeah, I'm actually talking on a homemade copper J-pole as well, so yeah, they seem to work fairly well. I built it for, was it 2 meters and 70 centimeter, and it works great on, you know, 144 megahertz frequencies, but, I'm sorry, 20 meters, but SWR is all over the place on, you know, on the 70 centimeter band or whatever, so I'm sorry. It works on 2 meters, but not so well on 70 centimeters. I'm a new ham, if you can't tell.
Not a problem. I am, too. I just started in May, but I had the time to put in. I went from zero to extra in about a couple weeks ago at a ham fest up in Gaffney. And the guy says it was tuned, but, yeah, it works pretty good on 20 centimeters, but it's blowing up my SWR meter when I put it on the 440.
I don't know. A buddy of mine bought a, you know, commercially built J-pole, and I basically copied it from him. I mean, all the same dimensions and everything, and checked them both with a Nano VNA, and they're both basically the same. They work great on, you know, on 2 meters, but not the SWR is no good at all on 70 centimeters. I don't even really know why they advertise it that way, because it's way out of whack on 70 centimeters.
I hate to say it, but I'm glad to hear it. I thought it was a problem on my end here, but, yeah, like I said, I can't use it for the 440. It just blows it up. I think I'm just going to get a commercial antenna for just get a commercial 2-meter 440, and then I've got an HF ICOM here that I need to get an antenna for and just suck it up and buy commercial, I guess.
I'm doing a lot of the same stuff here because I've, you know, just got into it and played around. I built a tape measure Yagi antenna out of tape measure material and PVC pipe, and it actually worked extremely well. You know, it's very directional, so you can point it at a repeater, and it'll get to the repeater no problem at all. And then I built a 10-meter dipole antenna, a vertical dipole that's, you know, we were going to fool around with trying to go short-distance simplex with, but my buddy never finished his or got going, actually. And what else? I built a little ground plane antenna for a friend of mine. I actually gave it to him, but if you're looking for make an antenna really cheap that works really well, look at the little ground plane antennas that got the four radials coming off, sloped down, and the one standing up, and it's all built on a little chassis-type connector. They're really easy to make, and the one I built for him works fantastic.
Roger that. I'm familiar with that. I used the connector there in the center. I believe it's a 209, and you can hook your wires up to it, and a copper wire about 20-inch lengths and stuff. I tried to use that, and it blew up my SWR, so I don't know if my solder job wasn't proper or what, but that didn't work out, so I got it sitting on the side somewhere. But I'm familiar with what you're saying. I watch a lot of antenna building on YouTube, and there's a lot of good information.
Stuff out there. Some of it works better than others. You know, I think on that little ground plane antenna, the trick is to be willing to cut radial lengths and experiment and, you know, change the length of them up and down until you get it where you want it. But I forget which YouTube video it was I copied it from, but the guy gave exact dimensions, and I just cut the rods exactly what he said and soldered it together, and geez, it worked great. I didn't have to do anything to it. So probably depends a lot on which set of instructions you've happened across.
Roger that. The guy I watched, he had a heavy English accent or something, whatever he was. But and the only piece I soldered was the center piece, the vertical piece. The other four, I just screwed in with small nuts, and then I double knotted the two nuts locked together so they didn't come loose. But it wasn't successful. But I guess I can play around with it. But I may just go commercial and just forget about it.
The advantage to the commercial of the cost courses is, you know, you should get what you pay for, and you know, it should work when you get it. I've been looking at buying one of those Ed Fung tri-band antennas that works on 70 centimeters and 1.25 and 2 meters, and supposedly they work pretty well. They're something like $70 or something. It all fits in a piece of PVC pipe, and I've been kind of threatening to get one of those because I think that would work. Cover three bands really well without having to mess around with it too much.
I've been kind of on that thought myself, but I find that nobody really talks on the 125 or in the 70s, even less. I don't know, everybody jumps on this 2 meter stuff, but I haven't been able to talk to anybody on the 70 or the 125, so I don't know if it's worth buying an antenna for it. I hear it's not popular, nobody really wants to use it, but I'm kind of, my whole plan was for the SHTF when it comes, so that's the whole thing, so having a variety of frequencies could be an asset later.
Exactly where I'm at, too. I've got a few buddies that I want to be able to talk to, and, you know, if we can talk on a band that absolutely nobody else is using, that's good for us. I haven't talked to anybody on 70 centimeters or on 1.25 meters. Of course, I don't, other than a handheld, I don't have anything that will do 1.25 meters. But, I hear you. It's kind of interesting. You know, we were kind of concerned about even being able to use repeaters, you know, in bad situations. But, you know, 90% of the time, nobody's talking on even the repeaters that are out there. So that was kind of interesting to me.
Roger, I picked up a few. I've got a few HT radios. I've got a couple of Bofangs, which are the GMRS, which is not as good as ham. But if you're trying to just talk across a parking lot or to somebody, and you know, when something bad happens, you know, within a range, without a repeater, those are pretty good. And I've got a TYT tri-band, and like I said, nobody talks on those other bands. And I've got a Anytone dual band that's supposed to do everything but burp your baby. So I'm still trying to figure that one out, but it's DMR, GPS, blah, blah, blah.
Bought a couple of, I guess they're BTEC, but they're basically Bofang UV5X3s, I think they are, the tri-band, and that's how I kind of got into this, and talked using the Yagi antennas back and forth through repeaters to a buddy of mine over in Easley that way, and did that for a while and got a little bored with it and ended up buying a FT991A that does, you know, all the modes and all the bands and all that, and I'm still trying to figure out how this radio works, but it's been interesting to learn about and everything for sure.
That the ones I was just telling you about, they're all HTs, and yeah, you know, the Anytone's good, but it's so complicated I can't figure it all out. I've got stuff in it, but and like I said, the Bofangs they're just a cheap throw to somebody in an emergency and say, you know, something happens, call me. And the TYT I got for like $80. I figured it was a tri-band. It might be helpful, but like I said, nobody talks on the 70 or the 125, so I guess when it happens, maybe somebody will, but it's as socially, nobody does.
Like I say, I think the key there is to, if you've got any buddies that are interested in doing what you're doing, you know, just get them together and decide on what, you know, bands to talk on and when and all that, and yeah, you should have the band almost to yourself, it seems like. I just recently started playing around with JS8 call software, and, you know, it works on bunch of the HF bands, and I built a 10-meter antenna, and I can sit there and monitor, you know, for JS-8 call for 24 hours, and there's virtually nobody talking on 10 meters on JS-8 call. On 80 meters and 40 meters, you actually decode quite a bit of traffic, but, you know, it's like you say, there's just nobody there talking on it, at least not that I'm receiving anyhow, but I don't know if you're familiar at all with JSA call, but it lets you basically do keyboard-to-keyboard text messaging over the ham radio, and the nice thing about it is the messages will just sit there and wait for you to read them. You don't have to be, like, there to hear it come in. This is KQ4AKE.
Did I jump channels? I was talking about CB radios.
The channel went dead there for a little while. Must have been off frequency, I guess.
Roger that. I don't know why it did that. It's the first time that radio did that. But yeah, it must have jumped. I was saying I've got an HF and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people say you should have a CB radio, even though that's 40-year-old technology. But you don't know who's going to have what when you need to know who's what, you know. And CB is cheap enough to get. And you may not. You may need it.
I think, you know, anything you can listen to, the better off you are. You know, listening to shortwave radio is nice to be able to do to know what's going on in other places, too. So, yeah, I don't know. Since I got into this, it's interesting. The technology part of it is really fascinating to me. It's really interesting. I've been learning about antennas and radios and propagation on and on. The amount of information that's out there basically on the air and the stuff you listen to and all that, I've been kind of really disappointed in it, other than I've talked to a few folks on the radio that's been really interesting conversations, but a lot of it's like, you know, why am I doing this, you know? So, I don't know. It's been kind of interesting. Kind of a love-hate relationship, I guess.
And I'm doing the same thing here. I bought all these HTs, and I got a scanner that I've had for 50 years, but I use that to listen on some other channels. I've got the CB, I've got the mobile radio sitting here as a base, and I've got the HF radio sitting here that I haven't even used yet, but I know it works. I got a good deal on an IC 735 ICOM HF transceiver. I paid like $30 for it online. It cost me more to ship it, and it works great, but I got to have an antenna for it, so...
Still on the radio for sure. Yeah, the antenna thing is a problem. You know, obviously, you know, for HF, you want an antenna up as high as you can possibly get it and all that. And, you know, living in a neighborhood type environment, that's one of the problems. You know, I can't really put up a tower in the backyard, even if I could afford it. But, you know, putting a 200 foot tall tower in the backyard to put up a really good HF antenna is kind of out of the question for me. So I'm trying to figure out, I'm actually right now looking at building a half-wave end-fed antenna and putting it on a 25-foot mast or whatever. And even that's kind of a challenge, you know. So the antenna part of it is really kind of a limiting factor in a lot of cases, I think, or at least it is for me.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm guessing you live in a HOA somewhere, and they're a big pain in the butt, but there's people that put antennas in their attics and they run stuff around, and if you just kind of go on and YouTube it and say, hey, I got to hide my antenna, I got to hide my HF antenna, tell me how to do it or what I need to do, you'll probably find something that'll work. There's this one guy talks about running wire around the ground, like, you know, like he's got a garden and he runs it around the perimeter of his garden or something. I'm not sure what that is, but there's solutions out there. You can hide them.
I've even seen people talk about hooking their antenna to the metal gutter going around their house and look using the gutter for antenna, which, you know, first blush seems like that would probably work too. That's a lot of metal spread out around the perimeter of the house, and it's up off the ground. But, yeah, it's just a little bit of a challenge. I built a couple of wooden stands, and I've got two antennas standing out in the front yard on the corner of the house right now with a J-pole on one and the 10-meter dipole on the other one. And, you know, I'm kind of sitting here every day waiting for somebody to complain about it, but so far nobody has. So we'll see what happens with that.
Question.
Yeah.
transmit there. This is KQ4AKE, sir. You were like the repeater was coming on and off, breaking in and out. Didn't hear what you said. Just heard you trying to talk. Copying that fellow, I'm not able to understand what he's saying. 4AKE in Simpsonville. Sir, I wasn't able to copy what you said, and it sounds like Roy has dropped off frequency now as well.
4QM, I just stepped away for a minute. I'm still here, though, but yeah, sounds like we've got the same issues.
Understand. Thanks.
Roger, but I think I am going to step aside here and just be on the side. I'm in the middle of an online tournament here, and I need to concentrate on that. But it's good talking to you. KY4QM, I'll just be listening on the side.
Hey, and I don't know if you said, but whereabouts are you located, sir?
I'm over here in Spartanburg. I'm right behind the Eastgate Mall. They give you a landmark if I pretty much like a mile behind that, so but that's where I'm at. Are you familiar with the Ham Fest that's coming up in Rock Hill?
I was not aware about Rock Hill Ham Fest. I used to live over there. I will check it out online though and see what I can find out about it. I don't want to tie you up if you're busy. So anyway, really enjoy chatting with you. Hope things work out with your antennas, and this is KQ4AKE. We'll be clear.
I was just going to tell you that it is November 12th at like 7 until whenever. It got postponed because of the hurricane. They were scared about it or whatever, and they moved it. But it's November 12th, just FYI. But I'll probably take a ride up there. But anyway, KY4QM, I'll be on the side listening.
CDV.
ZEB, I think it was. This is KQ4AKE in Simpsonville. You're coming in loud and clear, sir.
Thank you very much. I just installed and moved my shack around, put everything back together. I'm just testing everything. I appreciate it. 73, KF4ZDV, we're clear.
Sir, it's KQ4AKE, we're clear.